Good evening, everyone. Yes, I said I would speak. I don't know what and how much I will say, but I will speak. This afternoon, late afternoon, just because I had some free time and I like tennis. At the moment, the French Open tennis tournament is being played here in Paris. And it's a traditional time of year when it starts becoming warm. And I've even gone to the tournament several times. That was when I was a journalist and I had access to tickets. Now I don't have access to tickets, but so I watch it when I have time. So this afternoon I watched the last set of an epic match. I could say, oddly enough, it made me think about the koan that someone had asked me about earlier in the week. Is an enlightened man subject to fall into subject to karma? And the Hyakujo, the teacher, answers, the enlightened man or person does not ignore karma. So since a few days ago, someone asked me about that phrase, and so it was kind of floating around in my head, and while I was watching this tennis match, I thought about it. I've been looking at this koan in a very different way than I have all these years before, since someone asked me about it. This phrase, an enlightened person does not ignore karma, and when the person who asks the previous question is an enlightened person subject to karma, hears that answer, then they have a great awakening. When they hear the answer, an enlightened person does not ignore karma. So there's this question of, okay, what does this mean to not ignore karma? And just very basically, when I watched the tennis match, this epic match that lasted 6 hours, I only saw the last set because I just turned it on at that time and happened to be that match. At the end of the match, the winner, who is rated number 70 in the world, had just beaten the player ranked number 9 in the world. So this was quite an upset at the French Open. This is a big tournament. They shake hands with the umpire, and then they each go to their seat and put away their stuff and whatever. And then the winner leaves the court first, and the winner stays on the court and addresses the crowd. So the winner, after shaking hands and all of that, sat down in his seat and took his towel and started weeping, like sobbing almost. And well, yes, he was. You could see him shaking, and then he took the towel down and he wiped his face, and then he would start crying again. And even when, he stood up, because the crowd stood up to applaud the winner, the loser who left, and he stood up and applauded him too, because a match like that, you know, both players are fantastic. If they go to 5 sets, 6 hours, you know, it's long. And then when he came to speak to the public, you know, he was still crying, this guy. And, you know, like, would turn away and wipe away his tears and come back and then would start again. And the crowd was applauding. So he didn't really need to start speaking yet, but it was quite moving, you know. And when the woman who was doing the interview with him said something to him, you know, wow, congratulations, great match, or whatever like that, and what are you feeling, or something, and he said, you know, I just love the game of tennis. And it was so heartfelt, and so, and you know that that's the truth, that 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 you could just sense the way that he played and to do all of this. And probably the other guy just loves the game of tennis too. You don't devote your life to that from the age of five, and go on the professional circuit and play these outrageous matches and travel around the world if you don't love the game of tennis. And, you don't do that for anything if you don't love what you're doing, really, you know, and be successful at it. So, so how does the, and then she said, so what were you thinking or something, or I don't know. She asked, I wasn't really paying attention to her questions, but, and then he said something like, I just play each point with the same intensity and attention or something. And so watching all of this, this koan came back to me about karma, not ignoring karma. And on a very basic level, we could say both of those players, in a certain sense, do not ignore karma because they know very well that there are consequences, there's actions and consequences, and that by playing tennis on a, you know, just playing tennis, you know there will be a winner and a loser. You know that. You know that if you hit the ball a certain way, something will happen. You know that if you don't hit the ball a certain way, something else will happen. You know that you're aware of, let's say, the if you win this match, then you will go on and play another match, probably against a better player because this player also survived and then you meet in the next round. You know, if you're aware of the karma of playing on a clay court, the ball does certain things on clay than it does on hard surface. You slide on the clay when you hit the ball in a way that you don't on a hard surface or on grass, all of these kinds of things. And to some extent, you have to not ignore that karma or you wouldn't do it. Because you wouldn't be able to do it. If you ignored the karma of possibility of losing, well, then you wouldn't play those points to that intensity. If you ignored the fact that you could win, you also would not play with that intensity. Of course, we can say, then you would not fit. If you're aware of karma, you would not lose a match. Well, that's not true. But part of being aware of karma is knowing that there are actions and consequences, and becoming more and more aware of in what circumstances are you acting and what happens, what are possible consequences. Even if it doesn't mean, you know, going through the, I'm sure this guy who won today did not calculate that it would go to five sets. It would last 6 hours. the other player would do this or that. It wasn't that at all. And so if we look at this koan from that perspective, so in the koan, what happens is that there's this old man who comes to the Dharma talks in the monastery regularly and sits in the back and goes away. And then one day, and nobody knows who he is. And one day he came to talk to the master after the Dharma talk and said, you know, I was once an abbot of this monastery in a previous life. And someone asked me if an enlightened person was subject to karma. And I responded, no, an enlightened person is not subject to karma. Because of this answer, I was reborn as a fox for 500 years. This is kind of, you know, Chinese folklore, but the consequence of my response was that I am not free, basically. I've been suffering the consequences of my answer until today. And he said, can you please, he asked the guy, can you please free me or something like that? Or can you please help me? And the teacher, Hyakujo, says, ask me the question. So he does. He asks him, is an enlightened person subject to karma or not? It's not karma, it's fall into, I think. You should probably look it up. It's not subject to, but fall into. Fall into, yeah. Sometimes it's translated as causation, but that's, they're talking about karma, so. Does an enlightened man also fall into causation? So the master has him ask the question. So even asking that question, even the fact that he came forward and that he even came and listened to the Dharma talks, and then that he should stay and ask the master, and then the master, who very astutely has him ask the question again. All of this is, the guy is becoming more and more aware of causation. He's approaching the response that the teacher then gives him. So it's not like some, you know, thing that just drops out of the blue that he gets it when the teacher says that to him. It's almost, and this is true for all of us, it's almost like we already know it, the answer. By the time we get to that point where we're asking the question, we're, you know, going and seeking an answer, we're, you know, putting ourselves in a circumstance where we might become free of whatever it is, or, you know, the tennis player who puts himself into this situation, he knows, he's already aware of this possibility of winning and losing. He or she is already aware of what happens when you play on clay or when you play on grass, whatever. And so already the guy is nearing his, he somewhere already has the response in him. And the teacher says he does not ignore it. The enlightened person does not ignore causation. So sometimes, you know, I said I've seen this differently this week, because the reason that we say someone is enlightened is because they see things as they are. That's a catchphrase, but it's just to see things as they are, not to be stuck by our opinions and our ideas and our prejudices and our projections and grasping and all that. So to see things as they are, already we see that we are not free of causation. It's not that we, the question of not falling into or falling into, almost once you see things as they are, has no meaning anymore. Because it's not falling into or not falling into, it's just being aware of it, not ignoring it. And then that changes how you act, you know? If you fully are aware of what happens if you steal something, or the potential consequences of it, you'll get caught and then go to jail or whatever, then you wouldn't do it, you know, if you really were aware of the causation, the cause and effect of it. And this is, of course, an absolute scenario. You wouldn't do it. But the chances are you would act in a way more appropriate than if you weren't aware of it. So the guy, the tennis player, I'm not saying these tennis players are enlightened in the sense that we're saying they see things as they are, but in a tennis sense, they are, you know, in the realm of tennis enlightenment, they have some element of that because they are one with their situation. They don't ignore the consequences of their acts. And when they do ignore them, then, you know, usually they get into trouble. There's players who, you know, like have tantrums on the court and break their rackets and insult the umpire and, you know, all kinds of misbehavior that they've lost sight of. They've lost sight of causation, the dharma of the karma of tennis, you know. And this applies to all of us in every aspect of our life. It just so happens that it was really clear for me watching this tennis match, because I too just love the game of tennis. So of course I was completely enthralled with it. And at one point my husband came in and he said, "Oh, who's playing?" I told him the players. He had never heard of these players. He had no idea. For him, it had like no interest whatsoever. I had heard of the players, but you know, the one who actually won, I had never seen play before. The other one I had. But it almost didn't matter who the players were. It was the... And it wasn't even, you know, like there's this word in French, the enjeu. It wasn't even like the stakes of the game or something. Of course, when the stakes of the game are higher, you know, watching a game at the French Open is very different than if you're in the park and you walk by two people who just play on Sunday afternoon. But sometimes that can also be as compelling and as clear an example of what I'm talking about. It's not really a question of level. However, when you get to this intense, the intensity level builds in a different way when there's, you know, a world, one of the top five tennis tournaments in the world, you know, happening in front of a packed audience of, you know, thousands and thousands of people on a beautiful hot Paris afternoon. So and so in this koan, which is, you know, one of the great koans in the Mumenkan, the old former abbot, Fox, is put to rest by this situation. I forget what the last line of it is. Hearing this, the old man was at once enlightened. Making a bow to Hyakujo, he said, "I have now been released from the fox body, which will be found behind the mountains. I dare to make a request of the master. Please bury it as you would a deceased monk." So, you know, this we go into kind of the folklore, but fox, you know, sometimes we say a fox is clever and tricky. And so in any case, he was made to suffer because he responded in the way that he responded the first time. And made to, because of his actions, went on perpetually in the same circle of ignoring causation. However, we could say, so the causation that he did not see but fell into, the consequences of that led him back to the monastery to listen to the talks, to ask the master, and to be free. So we just never know either. You know, it's not like we can say, "Oh, okay, you know, if I do this, this will happen." Well, we don't really know. You know, we don't know what the consequences will be. But the more we're aware, the more we don't ignore the causation, the better chance we have of not harming ourselves, not harming others, acting appropriately, being one with the circumstances and the situation, being one with life, you know, going in the direction of the harmony of life rather than creating disharmony. I mean, we could say, you know, the karma of tennis is even, well, you know the rules, and if you don't play by the rules, well, then you won't even play. You know, so that's where I just love the game of tennis comes in. It's like to have this such a deep love for something that you respect it. And you respect and you play every moment, every point with the same intensity and attention. So we could say, well, I just love life. And therefore, I respect it. Or as my Zumi Roshi say, appreciate your life. When you see causation clearly, then you fully appreciate life. You see it. It doesn't mean you have all the answers. It doesn't mean that, you know, you won't get sick. It doesn't mean that you won't grow old, and it doesn't mean that you won't die. But you experience all of that differently when you see the causation, the karma of being human, say, or playing tennis. You could apply this to everything, you know, and think that the sky is the limit every moment. So whether it's, you know, playing a sport or playing music or working or walking down the street or sitting on your cushion or cooking dinner or receiving bad news, receiving good news, even what we consider bad news and good news. You know, sometimes like this young man, this tennis player who was crying today, at the end of the interview, the woman said to him, you know, we see, you know, we can now see the smile on your face, even though we know those were tears of joy, you know. He wasn't crying because he was devastated. You know, he was fully living this emotion. And so sometimes we have joy and despair and anger and happiness and fear and comfort all in at the same time. And these are all part of, for him, all the karma of tennis. For us, the karma of our lives. So I will open it up to you all and see if, I'm sure no one else watched the tennis match today. The only possible person who did would have been Freddie, and probably didn't, but if it was basketball, Freddie would have watched it, but it doesn't matter if you watched it or not. Freddie?
Good night, everybody. I've seen the same scene. I just came at the end of the match too. Yes, and I saw Marion Bartoli, who was an ex great tennis player, who interviewer the guy. So I just saw the end of it. Yeah, it was very emotional. The guy was exhausted. He gave everything he could. He was really, in French we say, at the end of his life. At the end of his life, like it's a way of saying that he was exhausted. So he was really, it's always very, emotional when you see people in sports, they go beyond their limits, physical, mental, We do, because we have difficulties too, but when you do a sport, it's these moments are sometimes really obvious, and it was incredible.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's just somehow thought Freddie might have seen part of it. But by the time you turned it on, you know, the fifth set lasted, I don't know, it's like almost an hour or something. It's really long. Yeah.
I really don't have much to say, except that I just find it just amazing and wonderful how we can, or you can go from a Zen koan to a tennis match and just make it so profound. And it's just amazing. And it cheered me, because I was, for once I was leaving the office on time to be here at 8, and was caught up by a colleague who kept me 45 minutes on something not much fun. And so when I started, so I connected just as you started talking, and it was like, I don't know, started breathing again or something. And so yeah, just that. I'm not a tennis fan. Even though as a kid my brother played tennis he was quite high level and then stopped, but we used to go to Roland Garros with my dad, and I saw Martina, what's her name, and the two that always played together.
Navratilova
and the other one.
Chris.
Yeah, these two. But anyway, so that was a long time ago. But I haven't watched tennis since, so it's still nice to hear about it.
Well, you know, we do go from a Zen koan to a tennis match and back and all around, because they are equally profound. Everything is profound. So the depth and the beauty and the simplicity of the world is just that. So, but I do understand what you're saying, that it doesn't seem obvious that we would do that. And the more that we deepen our awareness, then the more how it becomes clear. You know, it's like seeing the, not ignoring the karma, the causation as part of that, just becomes clear that it's that, it's this. What else could it be? You know, of course, I always say that, but it really is true. What else could be? What else could it be but this, you, here, you know?
I just wonder how many Zen teacher Roshis speak about tennis in their Dharma talks. Just wonder. Even though, yes, I mean, yeah, it's all about that.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard anyone talk about it. You know, I think probably my grandfather in the lineage Genpo, he you know, he probably could talk about swimming and water polo and stuff that he was familiar with. And I don't know. Or, you know, but it's true. I don't think I've ever heard a Dharma talk about tennis. Although I talk about tennis, an example I often give is when I learned to play tennis. When I was a child, and I took tennis lessons, and I played a lot of tennis too growing up. And learning to hold the racket, and in my day, we did a one-handed backhand. And that guy today who won also had a one-handed backhand, which was just amazing, but which most people don't do anymore. And how, you know, we learned the different parts of it, but when you get out on the court, if you are thinking about breaking it down and while you're doing it, you will never hit the ball. You know, so you have to let go of the breakdown or something of it. We practice, but then we stand up from our cushion and we go into life and we're not thinking about, you know, the Eightfold Path or the Four Noble Truths or something. It's not it, or the precepts. It's more living. So I do talk about that aspect of tennis, but it's true. I don't think I've ever talked about the game before. Maybe. Although some of you have also heard me talk about football. That's another one. So actually in basketball with Freddie, I talk about. But so maybe, actually, maybe I should do that. Maybe I should do a whole series on the Dharma of sports, you know. It's true.
Yeah, and Zidane in particular.
Absolutely. Zidane, yeah. Yeah, he's a major subject. Yeah. Well, and I even have a picture of Zidane on my bulletin board here somewhere. Which is real. This is not photoshopped. Can you see this? Yeah. Yeah. It's not photoshopped. Debbie.
Well, actually, this is reminding me of a conversation. It was one of these Dalai Lama. It was Eckhart Tolle and other various sort of in that realm of discussion. Maybe it was one of those mind and life things. And they were commenting on the fact of being a sportsman, being absolutely centered during a brilliant whatever, pass, hit, that. I mean, it's like archery. You can't just kind of flop a football. You have to know where it is and get your foot there. You know, it's a whole, as you've been saying, I say, you know, because given my eyesight, this is not something I'll ever know. Anything with the ball I can't do because I don't know where it is, but I do conceive that you guys do. And getting that all lined up is, it's a Zen moment in a way.
Yeah. And one of the greatest basketball coaches in, you know, the late 20th century was Phil Jackson, and he was a Zen practitioner. And he influenced very much his team. Everybody knows this too, the Chicago Bulls. with and had them doing meditation stuff and things like that. And they were won champion, I don't know how many championships. And then he was with the Lakers too, right, Freddie? Or no? Krisha.
Hi, everyone. Try to get into this conversation. I don't know. I'm a sports, don't know the name, but I don't like it very much. I have some prejudice, I think. Prejudice is the right word. I've made ballet, and we in the ballet conservatoire, it would be like Opera de Paris, kind of think of sports in a bad way. It's true. I'm sorry. And my children, of course, they are not in ballet, and especially the oldest, like sports, and she likes football, and she likes Benfica, which for me, I say, oh dear, you could be, you know, opera, ballet, something nice and tidy and not with all that violence and whatever. But she has the t-shirt, the scarf with the name. And of course, I support her and I like to see her, although I really hate it. When she wants to see at home, but she goes meet her grandfather or girlfriends, and it's okay. And last weekend, it was a big Benfica day, which they win something really important, the 38th time, and everybody in Lisbon gone berserk. And my eldest wanted to go to a place where they all go, which in Marquês de Pombal, with all that football players and a lot of Portuguese. And I think, oh. And then she found a parent, a couple of parents, mother and parent and father, who went with her and the two children, all girls, to join the party. And by the end of the day, me too, which I was with my youngest, went to a party with my friends, a dinner party. They all were seeing football, Benfica, and by the end, I feel the urge. Oh, and I will be from Sporting, although I don't know who is the mister, or I don't know anything about it. But it was something in the family, and I say I'm from Sporting. And by the end, I was singing with them what I think the awful music always, SOB, SOB. But there is a complete joy, and you cannot be caught with it. And I think I was really trying, you know, this Dharma talk to have meaning, although my prejudice with the stuff, not so much with tennis, but I don't even see it. I know what it is, Roland Garros, but that's much. And yeah, they all go, I think I saw the end of it. They are really young. They have to be quite aware. It's, if you think of it, it's quite mindfully. It's almost an analogy for life, I think Roshi said. Not in a bad way, but it's like when you choose life, when you go to the game, you are fully aware of the myriad of causation. I like this term, never heard it. More than karma, it's too much abstract. And you can fully be there myself tend to love life. This is not always, because sometimes I get really contracted with pain and whatever. But when you are fully there, there's a moment that everything, it's not winning, it's winning, losing, pain, despair, everything, it's life. And I can fully understand that sports Dharma talk analogy, Cohen. And that's my sharing for now. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah, beautiful. Well, it's funny that, isn't it? How, you know, you can love ballet and hate Benfica and, or be a supporter of Sporting, and then your child doesn't want to do ballet and loves Benfica. It's like, that's just life, right? That's the karma of life as well, you know? So.
Am I going to pass for a total ignoramus if I ask what Benfica is?
I think that would be totally legitimate to ask that, because if you're not a football fan, particularly if you don't know European football and Portuguese football, you wouldn't know. Does anyone of the Portuguese like to respond? I could respond, but there's many people from Lisbon on this screen and they know.
It's a Portuguese football group, team, yeah. From Lisbon, yeah. One of the classic ones, yeah. Usually they're the guys in red. That's the classic color for Benfica, is red. And the other team Krisha was talking about, which is her team, is green. Yeah.
And they're great rivals, and Benfica has won, you know, 38 championships and European titles. And so, yeah, there's Mara.
Hi, I'm also Sporting supporter. So when they won the title, I thought, oh, I'm glad I'm not in Portugal anymore. They are so tiring when they win. But then I saw the footage on TV, people celebrating and the players and the hard work. They, after 1 year, it paid off and they won. So I could see they were happy. And so I was like, okay. It was contagious. Without wanting, I was happy for them. Because they won, even though I would prefer that they didn't. And then this team, Benfica, they have a Norwegian player and plays in the national team in Norway. And so my husband is Norwegian. Gunnar was like, oh, but they have this player, so we need to be glad for them as well. So, okay. So that was...
Thank you.
Well, for a change, I was quite upset with all that football thing, because it was completely impossible to watch TV, because everything was Benfica, Benfica, and Benfica. And so it was really... And how they see it is, actually, I think there is a very commercial thing, and they are rising emotions on people and people. So I don't think in that kind of sport would be how they say a balanced view. But I try to, if I, sometimes I have, I watch a game, but I always try to the impartiality. No, I don't care who is going to win. Of course, I may have lots of enemies about that. Well, but because I don't care. And more and more, I don't care. I care less and less about the football. And because I see it very much as a commercial. Rising of emotions just for TV profit. It's not even the sport. It's not even a sport. It's just a show. So I would, what I do as a sport is archery. Although I am always the last one in the competition, I love the competition because this makes very, is good for the coach, you see. The coach likes a lot, and so is so I'm a nice guy, so I go to the, I practice the calm and condescendencia, I don't know how to say this, but with the for the coach, okay, it makes good to the coach if I go there. So I go there. It's not, no problem. I don't care if I'm going to win. I know I don't. But but so the actually is as a sport is physical actually, but it's much more. There is a competition, but the thing is, if you want to win, it's very zen, I would say. If it's essential to be calm and relaxed, attentive, but relaxed. So, if you fire your arc with the intent of winning, you become more nervous. It's more stressful. So the best way of doing that is not want to win. Okay. So if you want to win, don't want to win. I think it's very zen. So I guess it's, if you want to be a Buddha, there is a stage you have to get rid of that feeling, isn't it? I guess there is no. Otherwise, you want to get something. If you want to get something, you are lost. So, so that's it. Here's my comment about the football. I just don't care who is going to win, but. Actually, I would prefer not having the game because I want to see something in the tele, something else. You see? So that's it. Well, that is my comment. I couldn't resist to make my anti comment.
Again. Thank you, Antonio. I don't think it's an anti-comment. I think it goes right along with what we're saying. And as you say, if you don't care about the result of the football match, you have a completely different experience of it than someone who really is invested and wants a result and doesn't see the whole situation or something. And like with the archery, you know? If you're stressed and nervous and tense about it, well, then you won't hit the target. We have a koan. He who shoots the arrow straight does not hit the target. So that's what that koan is saying too. But straight and target and whatever. And of course, because in the culture, we live in the culture of merchants and consumer society. So of course, everything is used for commercial profit, you know. Even what we're doing, meditation, you know. Completely taken from, I would almost say perverted, but not quite perverted, but used in an inappropriate way for money-making purposes. And yet that too is part of our karma. Yes, Freddie?
So. Maybe we can say that every kind of deliberate practice of anything, if you have a deliberate practice, your focus, you're there. It's like anything, sports, sitting. Just to be there, be fully there. And that's why, because of a lot of time we are not really there. We do something thinking about something else. But if we are really there, it's a deliberate practice. And then everything is practice.
What do you mean by deliberate, Freddie? Can you just explain?
While you're there, you're like when you sit and you're watching your breath. When you shoot, you're just shooting. When you sow, you're just sowing. Mm. You're not thinking about something after. Mm. A lot of time we are mixing things. And some people don't do it because maybe there is stakes. When you do sports, you repeat a lot of these movements. Yeah. But when we did these two, do you remember? We had to be there. If you are thinking about something, you're gonna make a mess. It's not gonna look like a rakusu, it's gonna look like something else. I don't know.
That's right, that's the karma of making the rakusu, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we just need to be aware. To not ignore causation, say. And love life, appreciate life. So I think we will stop there. Oh, Debbie, yes.
Yeah, no, I wanted to say something that has nothing to do with tennis, but I wanted to make sure that we were over that. Last Thursday with Krisha and Joelle talking about hearing the beating of their child's heart was so beautiful. It stayed with me all week long. It was really, really tops. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, I guess we'll stop there.